Behind the Herald Headlines with Darren Mann.
Behind the Herald Headlines today with Darren Mann, looking at a story which is gaining traction on social media. An alcohol video recently landed a Quebec high school and their pupils in hot water. Girls as young as 15 were seen drinking on school premises, with one allegedly smoking ganja. Anecdotal evidence would have it that these incidents are becoming more frequent. Anecdotal evidence would also have it that the learners involved are becoming younger and younger. Is that the case? We thought we'd reach out to Quebec psychologist Wesley Q. He joins us today. Thanks for your time, Wesley. In your professional experience, are these incidents becoming more frequent? Are those involved becoming younger?
Yeah, good morning, Darren, and good morning to your listeners. You know, alcohol is a very interesting thing. A lot of more pertinent research is actually coming out, and that's they're calling it the beer before bread. And we're actually finding a lot of agricultural or architectural sites dating back thousands of years that highlight that one of the reasons human beings actually settled down was because there were certain crops around that they could actually make beer from. So if we use through ritualistic purposes, you know, getting together, and it's become, you know, quite a big part of South African culture as well as many cultures around the world. You know, South Africa has quite a interesting connection with alcohol. You know, there's a professor Perry who actually highlighted that during apartheid years, many subsections and cultures weren't actually allowed access to alcohol. So people would engage with speakeasies and things like that. So drinking, you know, almost was seen as defiance of the, you know, some of the apartheid laws. So it's something that runs quite deeply within our culture. You know, there's also what they call the dorp system, where people were paid in alcohol, and so, which is now being abolished. But you know, it's quite a deeply entrenched system within our cultures. Then, if we go as far as, is it becoming more prevalent? Well, you know, there's quite a glorification of substances, you know, alcohol, as well as marijuana, and other drugs as well, through pop culture, Hollywood, social media. So we also see a massive increase in engagement with social media. So what we see, we tend to do. So is it on the increase? Well, a lot of anecdotal evidence, as you said, would highlight that it is becoming more and more prevalent amongst our youth.
Wesley, why is it that some youth are more susceptible to it than others? Because not all youth indulge. What are the factors at play there? Does it start at the home? What's your experience?
Well, so we've got a lot of research to highlight that. So teens tend to distance themselves from their parental home or group and form a closer attachment with their peers. Now, sorry for the jargon, but there's a thing called persecutory annihilation anxiety. And that alludes to, an infant knows on some level that if it doesn't maintain this connection with mom and dad, there is an impending doom that will happen. They won't survive on their own. Now, as we grow a bit older and we become teens, you know, the ability to survive on your own is also akin to this separation that we have to experience as an infant. And to a certain extent, these teenagers also understand that if they don't form an attachment with the group, they will be pushed to the side. And that's basically akin to a type of death. So when these teenagers begin to attach more closely to their peer group, we also know that there are certain risk factors, you know, things like, you know, youth with a difficult temperament, having maybe cold and unresponsive female figures. And then there's also, you know, modeling of the parental substance use. But a quick side note on having a cold and unresponsive mothering figure. You know, there was a study done with the Fortune or the top Fortune 500 people, and they were looking for a common denominator amongst all highly successful individuals. And the one common denominator that they found is that every one of them had a strong female figure in their lives. So it's quite interesting that we see that success is related to having, you know, just that one person who creates this, you know, safe space for us, a person that allows us to show a vulnerability. You know, in psychology, we'll often call it a libidinal refueling, meaning that when you go and connect with that someone, you can draw energy from them. You can draw that sense of everything is going to be okay, and that, you know, I don't need the world as much as long as I have this connection with you.
Is there a danger that, left unchecked, things can spiral out of control even further? Today, alcohol, tomorrow, marijuana, weapons the day after.
Well, yeah, of course. It's, you know, so, you know, you're talking about spiraling. There was a very interesting study done by Dr. Bruce Alexander. So, you know, you might be familiar with, you know, if you put rats into a cage and you give them an option between, you know, water and drugs, they'll do so many drugs, they'll eventually die. Well, Bruce Alexander went and thought, okay, it's interesting that these rats were kept in a cage with two options, food or drugs. Wow, they clearly chose the drugs. But then he designed what's called the rat park. And in this rat park, there were treadmills, there were toys to play with, there were nature-like environments. And what we found is these rats started thriving. Yes, every now and then they would go and get a little hit of the substance, but they would otherwise absolutely thrive in the societal paradise. Now, we could draw similes to this. What is the environment that these children are engaging with? What is the home environment like? What is their societal environment like? What is the school environment like? And then we have to go into the digital space. What is their digital environments like? You know, what are they engaging with consistently? Is it the sense of, you know, young money ballers? Oh, I was at the gym the other day and I heard this song. How does it go? The bigger your bill, the harder you ball. And I was like, wow. You know, I get the premise, but is that really the narrative that we are sort of force feeding, you know, individuals to believe? And then you start looking at pop culture, you know, that's the narrative. And I always love those pictures of they compare Jay-Z to a 21-year-old with all these chains and bling and whatever. Now Jay-Z's worth like $2 billion and he's wearing like a black shirt with no showing off. And it's, you know, it's really such a disparity. But anyway, coming back to it, you know, I often believe that, you know, people in general tend to be a symptom of their environment. So instead of looking at these children as the problem, we've got to ask ourselves, what are they modeling? Where are they seeing this behavior? And you know, what we can do about that is really looking at the point of departure, which is their influence.
What about the lack of a male role model? You referred to a strong female role model earlier. And sadly, in many parts of society worldwide, dad isn't around. And the lack of a nurturing male role model means that they look up to the rap stars, the gangsters, the criminals in the community. Is that a factor?
There is, you know, quite a bit of research on that as well. You know, substitutes have to be found. And, you know, one of the things that people underestimate about, you know, peer groups or even gangs or even a sports affiliation is that you really do find this acceptance. You find this engagement with someone that teaches you how to give more. How to be, I'm going to use the word more, harder, but you find a group that will take care of you as a father figure would. And within that, we find safety. You know, another thing about these social groups where we engage with substance use, we find that there's a acceptance of who we are. There's a sharing of pain. And when you become part of these communities, it's almost as if your difficulties dissolve into the group difficulties, and you can then be accepted into this, we suffer together and that's our strength. And it's a very interesting design, because that becomes a self-perpetuating problem. So you get further entrenched in it, and eventually you don't see an identity and you just accept that your identity is now the group.
Turning the focus back onto the school in question, and the video, I'm told, attracted more than 50,000 views. I think it has been taken off Facebook subsequently. But what do you say to the parents, the teachers at the school, and also the parents of other scholars, learners, who are very concerned about the effect this is going to have on their children who aren't necessarily involved? Because you'd expect the school to be a safe place.
Yes, we would historically expect the school to be a safe place. However, you know, let's look at, again, what is the school supposed to do, and what are schools doing today? You know, it's, I don't want to get into too much trouble with the way I say it, but at the end of the day, there has to be a responsibility from the parental groups. You know, schools were never designed to be a place to parent children. They were supposed to be a place of learning and an education. And yes, there was a measure of discipline that was required to keep children in line. However, these days, the ability to discipline children at school has become ever more challenging. So if parents really want to engage and find ways to solve this, spend some time with your child. You know, parents have, there's so many pressures today, you know, financially, you know, at work, societally, et cetera, that very often the biggest, you know, loser is the time that parents get to spend with their child, you know, just in relaxing and creating a space to find out what is actually happening with the child. You know, it doesn't matter what kind of environment a child might be experiencing from the parent's perspective. The child might have a vastly different experience. They might feel that mom or dad is spending more time with the brother or sister, or they need more time with their friends, and they don't feel accepted. So therefore, you know, they are going to turn to a substance that gives them this sense of feeling everything's okay. So it really does come down to the parents finding out who their children are, and also taking a hard look at what are they modeling for their children. You know, so often, you know, people will come home like, oh, I've just had such a hard day or whatever. I just want a glass of wine or a beer and relax, or, you know, just I want to have my coffee and my cigarette in the morning first before I'm ready for the day. You know, you say that enough times to someone, the child just goes, oh, okay, cool. So I need a coffee and cigarette before I start the day, you know, or yes, you know, life's just so stressful. I'm just going to hit my joint and I'm just going to relax, you know, because then the world makes sense. And the scary part is what we're doing is we actually imbue these substances with the things that we crave, and then therefore become our own substitute or our own libidinal refueling. And that also becomes a dangerous setting, because we then put our ability to cope outside of us. And this is what we find with people that are quite successful. They have quite a strong internal locus of control. And that's what I implore parents to do, is help your child find the resources they have inside of them. Help them build resilience. And one of the ways to do that is to help our children go through difficult times. You know, parents are often reluctant to share their vulnerabilities, how they struggle, what they did to cope. And, you know, that's something, again, sounding like a stuck record here, but parents need to spend more time with their children.
Well, it's a complex issue, and it involves many, many factors. We really appreciate the professional view that you've shared with us today, Wesley. Hopefully it won't be too long before we catch up again. Appreciate you joining us. He's a psychologist from Klabecha. Wesley Q, thank you. Have a good day.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Have a great day, Darren.
Behind the Herald headlines now, catching up with the opinion from the Education Department in the Eastern Cape. It's all to do with the brazen behaviour of girls from St. Thomas Senior Secondary School in Galvindale. A video surfaced on social media this past week showing girls aged between 15 and 18 drinking at school. One of them is also seen to be smoking what appears to be a joint. Eastern Cape Education Department spokesperson Malibongwe Mtima joins us today on Behind the Herald headlines.
Good morning, Darren. Good morning to your listeners. Listen, man, this is a thorny issue, that we never anticipated. I want to start with a different one to say school is a three-legged pot. We put it that way. It's the parent, it's the learner, and it's the department plus the educators. Once any one of those legs is found limping, issues like this will emerge. Because in most cases, the behavior of kids change when they do not have, when parents do not have total control, number one, due to peer pressure, two, three. Some of these learners do not have a strong background, hence they will fall prey on those things. That is why we would say on instances like those, we call upon parents to work with us so that we can uproot this thing. Because as a state government or as part of the government, we have access to the police whom we may use to deal with this thing at school. But remember, school premises, you don't find shippings there. You don't find people that are selling cigarettes nor the joint. So it's coming from the community. That is why we're saying community members, parents must make sure that they look after their kids. They search their bags. When they see behaviors that are alien, they must quickly act because it may be that the child is using these.
Mali, it seems to be that these incidents are becoming more frequent and that the learners involved in these incidents are becoming a little younger. Is that your reading of it as well?
Yes, it's worrying. Look, even if you can check this is not a separate incident. Remember, there was just an incident of 13-year kids from Enyobeni that were found to be drunk. A blueprint that is telling you that something is wrong from the home. Because how do you allow a child younger to freely roam? Even in that case, how do you, as a parent, you've got an obligation, it's not a right, you've got an obligation to ensure that now and then you check your child's books, you check the bag that is carrying the books, there could be a gun or a knife there. What will happen? So that's why parents must play an active role so that at least we are able to nab it from where it begins, the communities. Then at school, it's going to be easy for us because we've got programs, for instance, the program against drug abuse, the program against teenage pregnancy, and program for school safety, where we're looking at the overall things. We've got things like search and seizure when we as educators and SGP pick up that the child is having an alien behavior and we're associated with. We call the parent, we give the parent an indemnity form to allow us to search and seize whatever is in their kids. And I'll be honest with you, recently, the age is getting, like you're saying, it's getting younger. Because even in Berlin High, recently, I think about a week or so ago, we found kids there very young with marijuana and cigarettes. It's an indication that homes or parents are not really strong in that. They must come through very strong so that we can assist them. Because at school, we should be getting kids that, in fact, you, Mr. Mann, should be dropping your own child at the gate of the school. If you are dropping your child at the gate of the school, it means the child brought the thingy from home.
Mali, from the department's point of view, I mean, you have a responsibility to support the principal and the teachers at the school in question. You also have a responsibility to parents of children who are not involved to make sure that they don't fall prey to it and that, you know, it doesn't spiral out of control. What are you doing from the department's point of view? It's a matter of great concern.
For starters, we've got an MOU with the police. Like I said to you recently, I mean, just now, I said, we've got a program that is called drug-free, or ensuring that kids are drug-free, where we test them, we use their urine, we search them when kids show these alien behaviors. We call the police, we send the indemnity form to the parent, we speak to the police, then they will come and they will search and seizure. But apart from that, we've got educational programs where we talk to them. For instance, 2 weeks from now, we're having a boys in Daba, in Tsitsa, where we're talking to them, telling them that because you are a man, you're not because you're a boy or a man, you're not supposed to be violent, you're not supposed to be using drugs, you're supposed to be exemplary, you're going to be a father next time, you must be a responsible citizen from now. That's the first one. Apart from that, we also have a working relations with social development. Should we pick up that your child is into drugs and you work with us, we can refer the child to social development, who in turn will take the child to a rehab. So we have various programs that are meant to ensure that we change the behavior of the child. But like I said, a child with no solid background, because remember, you as a father, a role model to the child, you must therefore present an exemplary behavior so that the child can copy from you. Because if you're using a drug as a parent, automatically the child will learn from you and do the drugs. That's number one. Number two, if the parents are not actively involving the life of the kids, then it means we're having a ticking time bomb, because one day that child will be selling drugs in their school because parents do not even participate in what the child is doing. That's why I was saying, the parent must be involved. That's number two. Number three, apart from the programs and that we're doing, we also have other social partners like your NGOs that we're working with that normally come to us and work with us to ensure that they help school. Despite all those, social development in their society is responsible for this, because they have a responsibility or an obligation to ensure that kids are told what is the impact of drugs, why they must not use drugs, from the society now, not from school, from society. So social development comes in there, and we've been working with them, like the likes of the National Department and the Provincial Department, to ensure that we uproot these things and we help parents where necessary. But the most critical thing, despite the programs of the department and everything, is the involvement of the parent.
Yeah, there is definitely big, big responsibility on the parents. Can I ask, in the specific incident of St. Thomas, which we were talking about earlier, where does this go to in terms of a disciplinary hearing? What sort of consequences are there for the learners that are involved in that particular incident? And then in general, how does the process play itself out?
Look, I'll give you two general responses. I'll not be as specific as you want me to, because if I become specific, then it means I will be prejudging the kid before a verdict comes out. So normally, the South African Schools Act states that if a child who is in a school endangers others, then we must talk to the parent and find amicable ways of ensuring that child who is endangering others is, like I said, is maybe transferred or channeled through the rehabs. Because remember, there are other kids that are there through the gang. Because it does not only end with the smoking or with the drinking of the alcohol. These also lead to gangs. That gang may harm a child who is not a member of them. So we normally make sure that we should such thing happen, we quickly call the parent, we hold meetings, and we refer them to counseling and ultimately to rehabs when we see that this has been, or this is deeper than we thought. We refer them to rehab, because the counseling will give us an indication of what is happening. Then if it's deeper, we refer them to social development, we'll take them to rehab. Of course, with the parent holding hand with us from the word go. So it's a variety, but we do. If he is posing danger, we refer the child, because we cannot compromise the safety of others. Number two, normally instances like these, they require a joint intervention of parents, department, or state institutions that help this. Because we do not want to create a haven for drug addicts at school, one. At the same time, we do not want to dump these youngsters at a tender age such that they become drug lords. That is why we refer them. So that instead of allowing the child to go home and then that's it from our side, no. We want the child, maybe the child is going to be a president tomorrow or going to be a Mr. Darren Mann tomorrow. Then we must refer them to a rehab that will make sure that it brings back the necessary behavior that is required from a child of his age or her age.
Right, so joint intervention is required for the drug problem. It's been a pleasure having you on Behind the Herald Headlines today. Eastern Cape Education Department spokesperson Malibongwe Mtima. The eyes of the community are on you, Malibongwe. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome, sir. Good morning to you and your listeners.
That was today's edition of Behind the Herald Headlines with Darren Mann.